everybody, and welcome to Geek Tyrants Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 78.
Yes. 78. Who typed the teleprompter, or a question mark in the teleprompter again?
There you go. Today we are going to discuss several things, movies, movie news, movie reviews. But first, let me introduce myself. I am your host, Dr. Vankman, and I am now going to introduce our panel who is with us this fine day. Why don't we introduce ourselves, and when we do, let's tell the people what your favorite comedy is. Favorite comedy. Okay, people? It can be a general, you know, somewhere in the top five, whatever. All right. You don't have to think about it too much. You know, favorite comedy. Mine, at this point, I'm going with National Lampoon's Vacation because every time I watch it, I laugh, and it was just one of those movies that just kind of popped in my head as being a classic comedy that I've just always enjoyed when I watch. So that's me. What about you, Mazer? Mazer is with us today. Hello, Mazer.
Hey. My pick is going to be The Jerk.
Look at you go.
Steve Martin.
Classic.
Steve Martin. Great. I love that film. Pick. Can yeah. I change mine?
It's too late.
Dang it.
I think Ben, we might have a lot of that.
What's going on, Dr. Vankman? How are you?
Not much. I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. I'm going to go... This is not my favorite, but it's one that I saw in the theater recently for the first time, and that is Ghostbusters.
Look at you.
I know. I'd never seen that on the big screen before, and that movie is just, like, it's so well-written. It's so funny all the way through, and Bill Murray is just fantastic in it. So, actually, obviously, it's where you got your namesake from. So
it is. It is. And I just want to say, I don't know if you've ever done this or not, mm-hmm. but I watched... A couple years ago, I watched Ghostbusters for the first time, and I had the closed captions up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. I'm sorry, but there's stuff that I've totally missed all these years. If you watch it and see it on screen, you'll pick up on stuff that you may have never seen before. Yeah. If you haven't done that, I suggest you give it a try. And I think that's with any movie, actually.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy watching movies with subtitles on, especially, yeah, like the ones that that give detailed analysis of what things sound like.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that. That's
great.
Always funny.
Descriptions.
Bob Neek.
What's up, Vankman? What are you saying these days, Vankman? What are you saying these days?
I'm saying, I don't know what I'm saying.
A weird question, right?
What kind of question is that?
You're the one who's supposed to be answering the question.
Wait a minute. Let me answer your question with another question. Yes. No, comedy. I'm just going to go recent, and I'm just going to go Anchorman.
Nice.
Anchorman. Yeah. Nice.
Brilliant.
Good
just,
pick.
Yeah.
Good pick.
Easy
and
pick.
And then Steve Vader is with us today.
Vankman,
right?
What's up, buddy? Yeah, I'm here.
Good. It's good to hear you. You know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I would say I'm just going to go with the first one that popped into my head. And that is School of Rock. I really enjoyed that movie. I think Jack Black is hilarious in it.
I think you're right, sir.
Nice.
So good picks, everybody. All right. Now on to some news. We're going to go through some box office numbers, take you through box office history. We're going to go back in time a little bit and do that. We're going to talk about some movies that came out recently. We're going to talk about Night and Day, The Last Airbender, and Grown Ups. And then we're going to go on to discuss some movie news, such as the new Paranormal Activity 2 trailer that came out, Top Gun Part 2. There's still a possibility that that could happen. And Josh Hutcherson playing Spider-Man, possibly. It's a rumor. So we're just going to kind of go into that a little bit. So, without further ado, the box office numbers for the week. Coming in at number one, no surprise, Toy Story 3. Brought in $59.3 million in its second week in theaters. Grown Ups came in at number two. This is its opening week. $40.5 million. We will talk about that. Night and Day. Tom Cruise is not pulling in the cash these days. $20.1 million on its opening weekend. It's not a very good opening movie for Tom Cruise, people. Is his career going downhill? Probably. Number four, The Karate Kid.
Although we say nothing.
I say nothing.
That's great.
$15.5 million. And running at the top five, The A-Team, hanging in there at 6.2. So that's your top five movies of the week. And now, for this week's box office history, we are going to travel back in time to June 1991. This weekend, the 21st to the 23rd. What do you think came in within, let's do the top 10. What do you think came in that weekend in 1991 on the top 10 movies at the box office?
All right, Bankman. I'm going to guess, I kind of chose 1991 just because I know one of my favorite movies came out that year. I'm not exactly sure. I saw it in theaters. I don't remember what month it came out, but I chose 1991 just so I could guess The Rocketeer. I have no idea if that's accurate, but
that is accurate. It right, is in the top 10.
Nice.
So congratulations.
All right.
P. Vader?
I have no idea. I'm just going to go with I'm going to go with a Tom Cruise movie. I'm going to go with Rain Man.
Hmm. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Because it's right.
It's not right though. That's the problem. Oh man. Okay, Mazer. What do you think?
See, I'm really fuzzy on 91. I can't think of any films that are in that time period because I'm thinking they might be like late 80s or mid 90s. Yeah. So I'm a bit fuzzy. Lame excuse aside, I'm just gonna throw out a James Bond film. I don't know. I doubt there was one in 91.
You're gonna
but...
throw out a James Bond film. Not a specific James Bond film.
I just covered some ground there.
Just one of the 23 James Bond films that have been made, or 22 James Bond films that have been made. Well, sir, you were wrong. There are no James Bond films in the top 10 list. You tried to cover your ground.
I tried to.
But
A for effort.
No, you fail.
Should have said okay. Star Trek or something instead.
Probably wrong,
Bob
too.
Bob Meek?
I have no idea. I'm going to say Beethoven.
Good Lord.
I don't know.
Man, Ben P wins the game.
It's such an obscure game, though.
Yeah.
Like, what are my odds, just because I know Rocketeer came out in 91, that it would be this freaking weekend that we're talking about? Like,
it's true.
It makes me look intelligent, but I'm really
well,
not.
Well, what's no funny idea. Is it was the Rocketeer's opening weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, unreal. So, but unfortunately, it didn't get number one, sorry to say.
Yeah.
Number one went to the classic... Dick Tracy.
Uh-oh.
No. The classic Robin Hood Prince of Thieves
ooh,
film.
Nice.
Its second week in the row, it made $18.2 million.
Killing it.
Yes. Yes. So there's your number one for 1991. Number two, City Slickers, in its third week in a row, came in at 10.7. I love City Slickers.
Yeah.
That movie is awesome.
I forgot about that entire micro franchise.
Well, now you know, and now you should watch the movies again because they're guaranteed.
In fact, I believe I've almost forgotten about Billy Crystal. He hasn't done anything for a really long time that's been good. I think he did that one film. No, wait.
He hosted the Oscars once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has he done anything really substantial in the last 5 years?
Has Jack Palance done anything in the last 5 years?
I think Jack Palance died last year or something.
I know. I know. But he was awesome in that movie. Number three, Dying Young, came in at $9.7 million.
What was Dying Young?
What?
Do you know what that is?
What's that movie about?
Dying Young, directed by Joel Schumacher and starring Julia Roberts.
I don't know why I know that film.
That actually
I've actually seen it.
That does nothing to jog my memory.
Yeah.
Number four in its opening weekend, The Rocketeer.
Nice.
Came in at $9.6 million. So there was your winning.
I remember watching that film in a drive-in.
Yeah, Rocketeer.
Yeah.
It was a double. What do you watch Ninja Turtles with it or
something? It was a double
feature. Oh, what an awesome double feature that would have been.
I know, right? The Rocketeer and Ninja Turtle double feature.
That's like my childhood.
Shit, party at my house this weekend. That's what we're doing. Okay, number five, Backdraft, came in at $4.5 million. Number six, Jungle Fever, $4 million. What about Bob? $2.9 million. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, which is being remade, $2.7 million. Soap Dish, $2.7 million. And Thelma and Louise rounds out the top 10 at $2.6 million in 1991. So there you have it. That is this weekend in box office history. Also, it is Wednesday, and just really quick, the Twilight Saga Eclipse came out this weekend and apparently made a record-breaking $30 million box office and screenings for, I guess, a midnight screening. So the fangirls went out, they bought their tickets, and that was the end of it. Now, I don't know if you heard this story or not, but there was this lady that was driving down the road in Colorado, and she claimed, the report claims that she saw a vampire in the middle of the road.
I'm sure she did.
And so to avoid hitting it, she put her car in reverse and drove her car down a ravine.
Wow.
To avoid hitting a vampire in the middle of the road. I read that story today. I just thought it was pretty funny. The police report said she wasn't on any drugs or alcohol, but there was a chance that she wasn't taking her medication.
I thought you were going to say, but there was a chance that there was a copy of Twilight on her front seat.
I thought you were going to say that there was a chance that the cop was a vampire.
Nice. You know, that probably is a chance too, so, you know. Okay, so why don't we talk about some movies we saw this weekend? Night and Day.
And there was this guy who was some sort of like secret agent or something.
Occupado!
And he killed everybody on board. The pilots are dead.
I had to be shot.
By who?
Me. Actually, I shot the first pilot. He shot the second one accidentally. One of those things.
No, okay.
Hi, June. Maybe I didn't make it clear enough, but we're gonna have to stick together.
I'm sorry, who are you?
This is the guy.
I'm a guy.
It's the guy.
I'm the guy. Please,
Bob,
for your own safety,
whatever happens,
please stay in the booth.
What are you talking about?
Everybody get down. No one follows us, or I kill myself and then her.
I know someone saw it, right?
Yes, Ben P.
P. Vader.
Yes.
I didn't see it.
You didn't miss much.
It was alright, man.
I heard some people who liked it. So
yeah, I've been hearing a lot of positive buzz for it.
Really?
But, yeah.
Okay. I mean,
no.
Listen, you and I both, I think, Venkman had talked about kind of being relatively excited for it last week, and
I'm still excited to see it. Oh man, that sigh of
I know. I hate doing it. I hate doing it because I want every movie to be good. But it was, you know, it's not going to win any awards, that type of thing. But it just, the writing wasn't great. It relied on a lot of cliches that we've seen before, especially in these like kind of couple team up spy movies. There was a few scenes that were almost directly lifted from True Lies. There were, I don't know. Tom Cruise was good, and he, P. Vader and I were talking about this before, and he said that Tom Cruise carried the movie, like, he made it watchable, and that's absolutely true. The movie would have been, like, it would have been killers if it wasn't for Tom Cruise. That's how kind of it was structured. And I was a little disappointed in James Mangold, because he's directed some really great movies. I'm thinking specifically of 310 to Yuma, and Walk the Line, which I don't know if you could call, like, a really great movie, but it was good, and it was really competently made. And I think Night and Day was competently made. It just kind of reminded me of a Brett Ratner movie, actually.
There was no
particular style to it. There was no directorial touch. There was no,
you know what? That comment right there with comparing it to a Brett Ratner movie has killed any desire for me wanting to see this movie.
I wouldn't have gone that far, though.
And at this point, I'm not going to go see it because you said that.
Yeah.
I will wait for DVD.
Yeah, no, I would say wait for TNT because it'll be on in 2012.
All right, I'm waiting for TNT.
You know, it's harmless. You can watch it on TV. I'm being too harsh when I say wait for TV. You could rent it. Definitely rent it. It's worth a rental. And Tom Cruise is enjoyable. And I think we both kind of enjoyed watching it at a lot of parts in the movie. But just when you step back and look at it as a whole, you can't really recommend the movie to people. It's not that good. I don't know, P. Vader,
so
what did you think about it?
So what you're saying is you're not recommending the movie to our readers and listeners.
So you're saying it wasn't terribly bad. Was there something in it that just wasn't working? You said it was missing some touches. Were your expectations? Because I didn't know that this director had done it. And after hearing it, I was like, oh, wow, this might be good.
Yeah.
But
I would say that just, like, kind of everything is missing about it. The only reason, and Ben P touched on it, to see it is, like, Tom Cruise, he doesn't complete the movie, but he's the only incentive to, like, he's your only investment, you know?
He seems like the only one who's having fun.
Yeah. He's the only one who's playing the character well enough for you to be interested in him, I guess.
You know, we saw the part in the trailer where he's like, with me, without me, with me, without me. You know, he does the hand thing, like, up and down, and that's reminiscent of, like, his Jerry Maguire, like, help me, help you. Like, it's the same delivery style and stuff, so you can tell he's kind of, like, having a little bit of fun with, and especially him playing this crazy rogue operative or whatever. There are a lot of parallels to how he's perceived right now in society and stuff, and he seemed to embrace that and have a lot of fun with it. It was just the writing itself, it didn't really delve into anything deep enough for it to be anything other than just a mediocre movie.
So nothing was, like, set up well and paid off well, and there were great moments like that?
No, not really. One of my biggest problem with it, and this is, like, a super, super minor spoiler, but, like, there's scenes where Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz would get into impossible situations that were just completely insurmountable and the odds were against them, and you were like, these are the points, this happened I think two or three times in the movie, these are the points where you're like finally interested in what's going on because you want to see how these characters get out of these situations, and then the writer just, it was so lazy because they had Tom Cruise inject or drug Cameron Diaz in some way so she fades out and, like, faints or whatnot, and then it doesn't ever show how they escape the situation. It just shows, like, kind of blurry in and out of consciousness moments from her where she, like, you know, flutters her eyes and, like, sees him shoot somebody and, like, running down a hallway with her over his shoulder or something, you know, something like that, and then, like, it goes dark again and then comes up and they're, like, in a car driving away somewhere and then it goes dark and then she wakes up and, like, the next scene begins. And it's, like, stuff like that where it was just squandered opportunities where those were the few points where everybody seemed to be collectively interested in what was going on and they never paid it off at all. Because they wrote themselves around it. They wrote themselves into a corner and then took the easy way out, basically.
Okay.
That's a shame.
Is it just because listening to the boys on the Totally Rad Show podcast, they said they actually liked that there were interesting things happening off screen that you didn't know what was happening. You'd like to know, but it didn't really ultimately matter to them. But I guess they had a different point of view.
That's definitely a way to look at it. I just personally, those were the... Maybe they were invested in the rest of the movie, but I really wasn't, aside from Tom Cruise's character.
Yeah.
I didn't have the... I wasn't willing to go along with the ride because I wasn't really being treated to anything. Like, you know, those were the moments where I really wanted to know what was going on and, like almost begged for them to tell me, and then they flashed away, and it kind of just lost it for me a little bit.
Now something they said interesting about Tom Cruise's portrayal was that... His character is unbelievably positive.
Yeah.
Through the whole thing, no matter how ridiculous it is. Is that his type of insanity, or?
Yeah. It's a believable. I don't know how you're using unbelievable and unbelievably positive, but it's like you believe Tom Cruise to be this positive, and.
Because he knows he's that good, or.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's just that fun.
He's kind of, yeah, he's having a lot of fun, and the character is kind of having fun, too. Even though he's in a, you know, what would be perceived as a dangerous situation, it probably does stem from the character's training or whatever.
So it's probably like what we see in the trailer where he's, you know, he flies onto the hood of a car and says, hey, you look really great. Oh, I got to shoot these guys.
Yeah. Those scenes were fun to watch. That's what I was talking about, where, like, I didn't hate the movie by any means, and I enjoyed watching it for those parts, but it just, overall, it was just, like, kind of bland, like, nothing...
It lacks personality.
You know, it reminds me of Vantage Point. Did you guys see that movie?
Vantage Point.
Really? Okay, well, I watched it and liked it while I was watching it, and it had a great cast, and it kind of reminded me of this because I really enjoyed it while I was watching it, and then almost as soon as I left the theater... You know, you kind of forget about it. Like, it doesn't have anything that keeps you thinking about it after you leave the theater.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I guess some people would say, like, oh, well, what did you expect? It's night and day. Like, you're not supposed to have those kinds of things. But at least I would want, like, a couple scenes to walk away with, you know, talking about, like, oh, at least this part was really cool. Like, all the stuff, all the really cool parts were pretty much seen in the trailer, I think.
Now, how bad were the motorcycle scenes? Because it looked terrible in the trailer. There was some bull stuff.
They weren't super terrible. You could tell, I don't know what it's called when they do the face mapping. Obviously, it's like a stunt person driving, and they just CGI their face onto it, like Tom Cruise's face.
It's always, you can always have it tell because the motion blur is always a bit off.
Yeah, that was my point mainly, is that you could tell that they had done that.
And those parts especially felt very written. It took me out of the movie during those parts where I was like, okay, I'm sitting in the writer's room with the guy who wrote this, and like, oh, how cool would that be if we got in a motorcycle chase in Spain and he ran into the running of the bulls? Oh, man, that would be awesome. Let's do it. And it's like, come on, man. Like, this is ludicrous, but I don't know. Aside from that, like, Tom Cruise seems fairly capable of like handling himself in there was this one cool thing in a car where they pull up on a parking garage on the top level of a parking garage, and he does this perfect spin out like
drift parking.
Yeah, drift park, exactly. And I made a point to like look at the lines and the parking spots, and he hit it exactly dead on, and he himself gets out of the car, so you know that he did it.
Now, have you seen me do that?
You do that all the time, so it's not even impressive
right.
to me
so,
anymore.
You know, don't give Tom Cruise all the credit.
But,
I'm the guy who taught him that crap, okay?
But, you know, for somebody like... For somebody like Jason Statham, who does all of his own stunt driving in the Transporter films, I almost am not even impressed by that anymore. I'm just like, oh, man, Statham's a badass. But for Tom Cruise, I've never seen him physically do something. You know, they always cut away to stunt guys or whatever, but so I was like, okay, that was kind of cool. At least, you know, he learned how to do that and pulled it off really well on screen, so
yeah,
that was fun.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad that he was able to pull that off well in the movie.
Yeah. Yes. Alright, there's one other thing that I want to bring up that's also kind of a minor spoiler, just really small. It doesn't really give any plot details away, but
is there much of a plot?
A tiny one, and the title makes no sense. But if anybody has seen the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. But okay, this one moment, it'll take just a little bit of setup, but I thought it was awesome. And actually, you know, I was talking about, like, oh, it didn't really leave me with any scenes that I was like, oh, this is awesome. There was this one scene that I'm going to remember for a while because of this movie. So, Peter Sarsgaard plays, like, another agent or whatever who's trying to track down Tom Cruise for various reasons. He's being set up, or maybe he's not, or whatever. That's kind of the mystery that the movie plays on. So, they get on this train, and Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz, and they escape at the last second. Peter Sarsgaard comes into their train car room or whatnot right after they escape, and he knows that they had just been in there. So he walks up to the window, like sidles up to the window of the train, and breathes on it, and in a certain spot, and a circle is revealed in the breath. You know how you can draw on windows and stuff? So a circle is revealed right in this exact spot where he breathes, right? So he looks through the center of the circle, and out in the public crowd, through the window, he sees Tom Cruise standing there with sunglasses, perfectly centered in the middle of the circle, staring right back at him, and then, like, a car goes by and he disappears into the crowd or something. And I was like, the foresight that Tom Cruise had to have to know that he was gonna come in there and then breathe in a certain spot. So Tom Cruise had to draw this circle with his finger and then figure out the exact angle to stand at on the opposite end, you know, outside, and stand there and look directly at him. I was like, this guy is such a badass. Like, this is the most ridiculous thing, that the most ludicrous sequence of events that you could possibly imagine somebody to do. But I really loved that part. So that was about the only part of this movie that I, like, legitimately loved.
And
that's such a small moment that it really kind of speaks to the overall quality of the movie, that random thing is the part that I really liked about it.
Awesome. So, rental is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Or TV.
Yeah. One or the other, I think.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, on to The Last Airbender, because I know a couple of our guys saw it.
You are the last of your kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation.
I knew you were real. I always knew you'd return.
You are the only one who can bring balance to a world at war. But some will stop at nothing to destroy you.
Destinies are tied, Zuko.
We started a rebellion.
If I'm a couple, I count as a couple of guys, I guess. So I'm
well,
gonna saw
did, Mazer, you saw it, didn't you?
No, I did not.
Didn't see it. Oh, never mind. No. Okay, one of our guys saw it, and that would be Bob Neek.
Yeah, I saw one word. Awful. It was honestly, it was really, really bad. I went in there hoping it'd be good. I really hoped that, you know, The Last Airbender, an M. Night joint, was gonna turn out all right. And he totally ruined it. I think it had so much potential, and he just ruined it. I don't know how blatantly, you know, direct and blunt I can be, but he just ruined the movie. And
now you watched the TV, the animated TV series, didn't you? You've seen that?
I haven't watched all of it, but I've seen a good amount of episodes. And, you know, which I can give M. Night credit, where he stuck to the storyline. He actually crammed 20 episodes. The first movie, this movie, is 20 episodes combined into 2 hours. So he stuck to the storyline. I went through all the, you know, summaries of all the episodes. He nailed the storyline. But he just turned, because if you've seen the cartoon, and I know Mazer watches, he's watched every single episode.
I watched every single episode, and the amazing thing about it is there's this over-the-top anime-ish action, but there's a lot of humor.
Yeah.
Tons of humor. Yeah. And being M. Night, he ruins it. And, he takes it. His twist. This isn't a spoiler, you know. But he doesn't. There's no twist in the movie. And his only twist is, yeah, he takes a really fun, really, you know, over-the-top, humorous cartoon and turns it into, like, a really gloomy, almost depressing, dark, like, made-for-TV, some whatever, piece of junk.
That was like, my main concern.
Yeah.
Seeing the trailers, I was kind of hoping that he didn't turn it into what you just said, like,
yeah,
a dark film, but apparently he did.
Now, I've been looking forward to this movie. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you... That's not good.
No, it's not good at all. Like, they... So, the main character is Aang, the airbender, the last airbender. And he starts off, you know, he's asleep, but he's supposed to be... In the cartoon, he's, like, fully awake, going crazy, having fun. And then he wakes up to be a really messed up kid who's really depressed. All his friends are dead. That's not a spoiler either. But all his friends are dead. He's really depressed about it. He's really traumatized. He's really gloomy. He only smiles, like, three times in the movie. And one of them is, like, a half smirk. And, like...
Wow.
All the characters...
Okay,
yeah.
So was it sad?
There were a couple points where I wanted to cry.
Because it was so bad?
There's a flashback that kind of, you know, brings a tear to your eye. It's kind of nostalgic. And there's a part where this girl I thought was really beautiful dies. Ugh. And that's not a spoiler either. But
I mean, people who've watched the cartoon,
if you watch the cartoon, and if you can't see it coming a mile away, then I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, okay, here's the sad part. It was a free screening. I wrote in my review, I felt ripped off. and wow. No joke, people were walking out of the screening. Free
Ooh,
screening.
Really?
Walking out. And I thought, you know, they're going to the bathroom. Never came back.
Ugh.
And I also noticed, I started noticing, because this movie, it's crazy. It goes from a good scene to a bad scene to a terrible scene to, like, a really, really, really awful scene. And after, like, a scene ended, I'd be like, That was terrible. And the second I thought that, I see someone pop up, walk to the exit. And then I think, like, a lot of people, like, you'd sit there and you go, "Wow, this isn't going to get any worse, is it?" And then another scene comes, you're like, "Wow, that was really, really bad." And then instantly a family would stand up and walk out. It was really, really bad. And,
oh, man.
I mean, the casting was weird. The acting was... The actors were... I mean, they looked the part, you know, and they're doing all these different things that just didn't... It didn't make sense. It didn't seem like they were interacting with each other. Like, there was no emotion. You couldn't sense any emotion. And, what's his name? Dev Patel.
Yeah.
I was really rooting for
him. Yeah, he's a good actor.
I like him.
Right?
Yeah, great actor. He had bad material or something because you just could... He had all these really... So he had all these emotional parts, or they're supposed to be emotional, and you couldn't feel any of the emotion he was trying to convey. And it was just really, really sad because he was, like, struggling, and you could tell he was really trying to push it out, but you couldn't, from the overall environment, from the setup scenes to whatever followed after, it just didn't feel like, you know, it just felt like he was throwing, you know.
So do you think his performance was hampered by bad dialogue?
Everyone's performance was hampered.
Wow.
I mean,
and
Aang was...
Did M. Night adapt the material himself?
Yeah, he wrote it, directed it, produced it. I think he wrote everything himself. He's the only one I see credited with writing.
Man.
So, he stuck to the storyline perfectly, but just, there was no feeling, there was no happy spirit, there was no tone, you know, that matched the original series. And even if you were to look at it as just a separate piece of work, there was no feeling. Totally, the word I use is disconnected. So,
it's a good word.
Yeah.
Did they set it up for a sequel at all?
Actually, this is the funny part. I was talking to Venkman about this. As bad as this movie is, as terrible as it was, I want to see the sequel. I just don't know if it has enough
of the original story intact.
Yeah,
that you want to see where it goes, and it looks like you said in your review that the visual effects are just the only reason for watching.
The only saving grace. Yeah, they're amazing. The elements when they're quote unquote bending the water and the fire and the earth. It's pretty cool, especially the water effects. The coolest scene is from the trailer, when he's throwing them, you know, putting people in like ice and stuff like that, is definitely hands down the coolest scene.
Nice.
So it's just breathtaking, the visuals, but just the second someone opens their mouth or tries to convey any sense of emotion, it's just
so it seems like they should have
awful
made this a longer film or cut out the material.
It runs, I think, just under 2 hours. And I would have been totally okay with them doing 3 hours had it been paced right. That was another huge concern of mine. I was like, the pacing, it was like, you didn't know it, but it was like 4 days had passed, and all of a sudden, like, you know, months had passed, and then, like, it takes, you know, a long time just to convey 1 minute of...
I just wonder if there is, like, a 3 or 4 hour version of this film that he was forced to cut down.
I would have loved to see that, because it probably would have been a lot better. They're just all over the place. There's so many. If you look at the cartoon, there's so many locations. Every episode almost has a different location, and they hop literally from location to location, banging out the storyline. But you're just left like just.
They go through a lot of places.
Yeah.
So,
he literally hits every single one of those locations, and he doesn't leave a character out. Is the other part?
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's a lot of little things that are that they set up way in advance in the series.
Yeah, you can definitely see that. There's little things are setting up for the plot, and that's why I want to see the sequel, because I'm like, oh, that has probably a more interesting story to that coming up. And it's, they do a good job.
I've got to say, having seen all three books or seasons, the third one feels like it could be the most compressed out of all of them, because there doesn't seem to be as many details as in the first one or the second one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it gets to a third film, it seems like that story could work better as a film. But the first one probably should have been just a longer first film or a couple films.
Yeah, yeah. This first movie is covering the Water Nation. So everything is water. And it kind of had the same feeling in the climax as, like, Clash of the Titans, that kind of feeling. It's felt like you're watching that, the city by the sea. It's impenetrable, and, you know, this whole...
Yeah.
Deal. But, you know, I'd like to see where they go with, yeah, the Earth movie and the Fire movie. That'd probably be pretty interesting. But
now, would you recommend this to our readers, listeners?
I would definitely not recommend it. If you're going to have to take your kids to watch a movie, take them to see Toy Story 3 again. Take them to see the A-Team if they can understand it. You know, I would definitely rent it. I mean, if your kids really love the movie, take them to it, but... It's a lot darker and a lot gloomier than I thought it was going to be.
Stick a fork in M. Night, because he's done.
He's done.
That sucks, man.
Yeah, this was his last shot, wasn't it?
I was rooting for him on this one.
I thought, you know, it's not his material. He's
disappointing.
He's working with great material, and he just... He's
got another script that he's shopping around right now that's got a... decent cast attached to it. He's got Bradley Cooper attached to it, and Bruce Willis is also tentatively attached to star in this new movie that is shopping around. But if this movie, if Airbender gets killed at the box office, is the studio really going to pick that up, or is M. Night's career just done?
I wish that he would have sold that script before this movie premiered, because I think I don't know if he saw this coming or not. I don't know if anybody could see this coming, because I haven't seen the movie, but I've been reading some stuff about it from press screenings and stuff, early reviews or whatever, and it's just getting disastrous reviews all over the place. I've not heard a single positive thing about it, with the exception of, yeah, like you said, the visual effects, and I actually only heard that from you just now, so yeah. Nobody else has even really been talking much about that, but,
I think it's just because there was so much potential.
That's
and it just seems part. So weird. It seems like Muhammad Ali just got knocked out by Woody Allen. It just feels like this impossibly large thing, and just like this, like, what just happened? Did he just Superman trip or something? Yeah. It just feels very weird.
That's the other part that's going to be hard for M. Night Shyamalan. Is like, in the hands of another director, it probably would have been a million times better, because it's just all the potential's there. You know, it'd be like ruining Lord of the Rings or something, you know? I mean, I wouldn't compare the two at all.
Yeah.
Including the books, but...
Well, wow. It does go to show how much it takes to adapt these things into... Yeah. I mean, just looking at say, Dune, which was this huge book that got, I think, was redone as a better television series.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if they redid Avatar as, like, a sci-fi series and did it better story-wise, but maybe not at the same level of effects, but maybe more satisfying to fans.
Or like a ABC miniseries or something, you know?
Yeah, some, HBO.
Or, yeah, whatever. And maybe not HBO just because of the audience. Probably wouldn't be an HBO audience, you know? Yeah. You want to keep it. Because, what, was this movie was rated, what, PG, I think, right?
It was PG, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, you probably don't want to throw it on HBO. But, yeah, something, you know, some sort of network television miniseries or something. Bring that stuff back. Throw, you know, $1 million at it per episode, throw 6 or 7 episodes in there or something, make it a 6-7 hour thing, and that way you'll have the time to explore the characters and not have to, like, rush through things.
Yeah.
I don't know. That sucks, man, because I really was kind of rooting for M. Night. I've been an apologist of his for a while, and, like, with each new movie, starting with Lady in the Water, I've just been like, all right, you know, that was a fluke, but, you know, he'll get it on the next one, and then The Happening, I'm like, maybe the next one, and it's just like, oh, man, all this stuff is just coming down one after the other, so I don't know how he's gonna be able to rebound from something like this, but...
I guess we'll see. I mean, he rebounded from The Happening. I don't know how that happened, but...
Yeah, if you can call this a rebound,
yeah,
I guess.
I know, right?
I don't know.
But the only good thing, and I'll make this really short, is that he's got the Night Chronicles that he set up at, I think, Meteorites Capital or something, where he wrote or came up with the idea for a bunch of these different movies. I think he's doing one a year from 2010 to 2012, so 3 movies, and he's... He, like, came up with the story and is co-writing them with other people and passing them off for other directors to direct. So he's just producing them, and there's, you know, I feel like that might be a way for him to at least get his creative juices flowing again and kind of get his mojo back a little bit. That seems like the only reasonable way that he can, like, stay in the industry at this point and still, you know, work and get projects moving, and hopefully maybe he'll come up with something good for himself. But
yeah, all right. Well, I saw Grown-Ups this weekend.
In 1978, they were the best of friends.
Everybody say championship.
Now they're getting back together for the first time in over 30 years.
Iggy!
Hey, what's up, Lenny? Buddy, I thought you were going to start working out.
What does that mean?
You're fat?
No!
Next summer, they're meeting each other's families.
Oh, and this must be your mother.
My wife.
I'm sorry.
I'm not.
Oh, Grody.
How was that?
You know, it was better than I thought it would be. I went in with extremely low expectations. The trailers just made it look like it was just going to be, you know, just a really dumb comedy or whatever. But it was actually watchable, and I laughed a lot through it. I mean, you see a lot of recycled jokes and stuff like that. But, you know, then it's littered with, you know, just some of this new fun stuff that they kind of threw in there that I wasn't expecting. And in the end, it was just, I thought it was cool just to see. The 90s Saturday Night Live crew was like one of my favorite SNL crews ever. I mean, I grew up with those guys. So to see them all get back together in a movie like this was something I was actually kind of interested in seeing and looking forward to. I just thought it was going to suck, but fortunately it didn't. It was better than I thought it would be. I laughed more than I thought I would, and it was a fun movie. I don't think everyone's going to agree with me. It's gotten some pretty bad reviews out there, but it was fun, and I enjoyed it. I just, you know, you don't have to think too much when watching it. And you just kind of sit back and just watch Adam Sandler, David Spade, Chris Rock, and Kevin James, and all those guys just, you know, Rob Schneider, just all those guys do their thing, and it was enjoyable.
I'm glad to hear that you actually laughed in it, because I saw the Pink Panther, for example, the Steve Martin movie, like, from 2006 or something. I saw that in an airplane. and I wanted to walk out. I don't know where I recently heard that joke somewhere. I stole that from somewhere. I'm just throwing that out there. I did not come up with that on my own. I don't know who to attribute it to, but I thought it was really funny. But no, seriously, I watched it on an airplane, and I literally did not crack a freaking smile during the entire thing. I hated it that much, and it was that, like, completely unfunny. And that's what I was thinking Grown Ups was going to be, where I was just going to walk away super angry at it if I ever saw it, but at least you say that there's like some legitimate moments.
There's some legitimately funny moments.
That's better than I thought it was gonna do.
One of my favorite parts of the film was when they all meet up. Okay, little background. These guys all grew up with each other. You know, they played basketball in junior high or something like that, and they won the championship. And the coach at this party, you know, gives this great speech telling them, you know, to play, to live their life like they played that game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they kind of go through this thing and, you know, it's like 30 years later. What are these guys all doing now? The coach dies. They all.
Obviously. Is the coach played by what is his name? R. Lee Emery, the drill sergeant, drill instructor guy that always plays the coach in every movie.
No, he's not. It's not him, unfortunately. But he would have made a great coach. But yeah, so the coach dies, so everyone goes back to the home, their hometown, and Adam Sandler's character is like this big time Hollywood agent, and. He rents out this cabin that they, used to hang out in, while they were growing up, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so they go out there, they bring their families out there, and one scene in particular is they're kind of out in the woods and they're like, kind of reliving their childhood days, and one of the games they played was called Arrow Roulette.
Okay.
And they would take a bow and arrow, and they would stand in a circle, and they would shoot the bow and arrow with an actual sharp bow and arrow tip up in the air. And it was – the game was them having to dodge the arrow as it's falling.
Wow.
So when they shoot the arrow up in the air, they lose it in the sun. And so they all start panicking and running – running around trying to hoping not to get hit by this arrow. It was fun. No one's laughing right now, but you had to see it to appreciate it. And I thought it was hilarious.
I'm shaking my head. You can't see me right now, but I'm shaking my head in disappointment at that.
Well, me explaining it doesn't do any justice.
No, that's true. That's fair.
You
enough.
Have to
yeah.
see it on the, on, you know, you have to see it just to get it. And that's what most movies like. I mean, I could sit here telling you a lot of the jokes and stuff, but me delivering it is just, it's pointless,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, I got you.
I mean, telling that scene was absolutely pointless, and our readers probably just stopped listening right now. So,
did they set it up for a sequel?
No, they did not.
Want to see a sequel?
No.
Okay.
If they really wanted to try and make a sequel, they could, but...
Do you think they'll make a sequel?
No, probably not. They probably won't make enough money to warrant a sequel.
Okay, all right.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it. But it's one of those movies you don't have to see in the theater. So I just say, rental. Just hold off until it comes out on DVD or video on demand or whatever.
Right on.
You got these days.
It's really been kind of a sad summer for movies so yeah. far.
Well, that was a bad weekend, I will admit.
Yeah. I don't know, Twilight came out.
Yes!
Ouch.
Awesome.
That could be the one we have to recommend if it's up against Last Airbender.
Yeah. Crap.
Yeah. I've heard that the third Twilight is actually better than the other two from a bunch of different people, but I don't know. I've never seen any of them, and I
what
don't
does
have
that
any
mean?
Interest
yeah.
in
them. What does that mean?
That means like sticking your hand in a beehive is better than sticking your hand in hornets or wasps or something.
At least there's honey, right? Yeah.
So did any of you guys see the new Paranormal Activity 2 trailer?
Yes,
we've all seen it. Yeah.
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 Did you guys see the first film?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I haven't seen the first film.
Me neither.
What?
You should watch it by yourself in the dark.
Yeah, I know.
You should.
Me and my wife don't do well with scary films.
Well, that's so perfect for you then.
Okay, I don't care how because much you can
stand because it will get the desired effect that, you know, that you want a horror movie to give you. I thought the original was pretty freaking scary. I mean, it legitimately made me scared to go home after I saw it at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I as simple as an idea as it was, I loved it because it was effective.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just a fun, scary movie that just really hits you in all the right places.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, to me, this teaser trailer that just came out, the first one was like very homemade, had a very homemade type feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And watching this, even though they're like security cameras or whatever,
right.
It looks so clean and crisp. And it, you know, the static and everything is just so like post-production stuff that it's not even registering with me that, you know, it just looks very, I know the first one was fake, but when they take it to a level where it really looks fake, it lost me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
I didn't have that same reaction. I see what you're saying, and I think it is just post-production, like, with the static and stuff. I don't think they're trying to trick us into thinking that that's what the actual movie is going to look like. I think they just use that for transitions and stuff between static shots and the trailer.
Yeah, I think it's more of a trailer thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I see what you're saying, but honestly, the only way that they can repeat the first film is to go with the security camera footage, I think. That's the only angle that they can take it, because you can't just redo the exact same concept, you know, straight up over and over again.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the whole point of the sequels. Like, just the sequel to that film is just a bad idea in general. You know?
Yeah, you're probably right. Obviously, they're trying to start a new franchise to compete with Saw and stuff, but
yes.
I don't know. I'm going to reserve judgment because, like you said, I really, really liked the first one, and it legitimately frightened me at points. And, you know, movies that can do that are relatively well made, I enjoy them for what they are. You know, obviously horror movies are a completely different genre. It's something that, you know, I don't think any of us really delve into much, but we like
I'm a huge horror movie.
Okay, all right, sorry.
You better apologize. I'm
How dare you, sir?
You know,
now, I love horror movies. I mean, horror movies are my thing, and you know, it's why I like the original so much. But this one, I don't know. It's just, you know, just the fact that they went and made a sequel. Obviously, they're just looking for a cash cow. You know, this is something they're going to make some quick cash off of, and I don't know if it's going to be any good or not.
Did you not feel that in the pit of your stomach, though, watching that trailer when you saw that dog and the rocking chair? Did you not feel... Okay, all right.
I did not, because... that's the thing. The first film ruined any type of sequel for me, because I'm expecting that stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that stuff's gonna happen.
Yeah, but it's still effective, though, I think. I don't know. We'll see how it translates in the final product.
It's going to be a different situation when it's built things very slowly. You've probably watched blackness.
I'm hoping it does.
And you're in there for 10 minutes before anything happens.
Now, I hope that it does do that. I mean, I hope that this film ends up being good and being scary. Now, the fact that they have a baby in here and me being a father... That right there kind of like takes things to a new level, because, I mean, that baby disappears. I don't know if you saw that or not in the trailer.
Yeah.
But at one point the baby's there, the next point the baby's gone. Okay?
Yeah, and you wrote up a post on the site showing, like, there's a picture there where, like, the baby is not there in the reflection or something.
Yeah, that the baby's in the reflection but not in the room. And it's really interesting. Now... this trailer opened up with Twilight Eclipse, and reports are coming in that this trailer is being pulled from theaters because it's too scary for the Twilight audience.
Wow.
No, I'm serious. This is what's being reported. Bloody Disgusting says that reports have flooded in that the teaser has already been pulled from theaters in Plano?
Plano, Texas.
Plano, Texas, and Harker Heights after various complaints from parents who took their teens to the midnight showings of Twilight to see the Twilight Saga eclipse.
What's funny is that you don't see a single thing.
No, yeah. Exactly.
Yet it's scary.
You see one character come at the camera for like 5 frames or something.
Which is the same as peekaboo.
Which leads me to believe that I think this is a marketing stunt that they've already started.
You very well could be right.
Yeah.
Because
it sounds like
so scary they have to pull it.
Because it's not, it's really not that scary. I've seen
it gets your heart, it gets those juices flowing though, like Ben P said. There's just some, you know what, I think it reminded me of the first movie. I just got that immediate feeling back. And maybe just the thoughts of the first movie scared me. Not even the trailer, just the thoughts of the first movie.
And the reason the first movie worked so well for me, I'm not going to do a full review of it or anything, but just the one thing that I really loved about the first movie was that the camera stayed static every night. Like Micah, or whatever his name was, put the camera in the same spot to kind of observe the couple as they slept or whatever, and the camera was on a tripod in the same spot every night. So it was like a welcome home thing, like a subliminal, like you return to that spot and like that's your safe spot.
Yeah.
You know, every few minutes, every couple scenes or whatever, a day would change or something, and you would go back to that spot and you knew something was going to happen, and it lulled you into this sense of like, okay, the tension is just instantly building because you're right back in that spot and you know something else is about to happen. You just don't know what it is. Your eyes are like super wide and you're like scanning every single inch of the entire like theatrical screen looking for whatever it is that's gonna pop out or whatever. So I hope if they can utilize that same technique, I think this movie might have the chance of being just as effective as the first one.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's good. I really want it to be effective. I really want to be scared. Mazer, we got to watch this movie. I have it, so...
You got to see it, dude. It's good.
I think we should do a horror movie night. You guys need to watch that shiznit.
And all the Geek Tyrant listeners are invited to Bankman's house.
And all the Geek Tyrant listeners are invited over to watch it as well. Okay, now have you heard about this new Spider-Man rumor that's hit the internet today of who's been cast as Spider-Man?
Yes, we have.
Okay, well,
Geek Tyrant, yes.
Well, of course. Or else switching here.
Where I go for all my geek news.
Yes.
Okay, so apparently word has leaked out that Josh Hutcherson is the new Spider-Man. And this news comes from Blue Sky Disney. Usually they're known for breaking a lot of Disney movie news, but they all of a sudden busted out with some Sony Pictures Spider-Man movie news, saying that that Sony liked him, that they offered him the role, and that he accepted it. Now, there's no confirmation that any of this is true, because... Oh,
that's just how the internet works, Dr.
That's how the internet works.
Yep.
I spend time writing up these posts of rumors, and it's just, man, it's one of those things.
Remember when John Krasinski was going to be Captain America?
I
for
know,
sure?
Right?
He was signed on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you don't know. We don't know if this is actually... real or not. To them it is, so...
Quick question. Does Josh Hutcherson have anything to do with Disney? I feel like... I don't know. I don't... Obviously, I'm a little old for...
I mean, he
Disney
was in...
Show. Is
what?
He on, like, Drake and Josh or one of those shows that's on now or
no
something?
Because
I feel like that would be the only reason that this Disney fan site would be reporting any sort of news with authority about him.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. And plus, he was the first one rumored at the very beginning.
Yeah.
That he was cast.
Yeah.
And now it's being re-rumored that he's been cast.
It's ridiculous, because another set came out just, like, what, 3 days ago that, like, Jamie Bell and Andrew Garfield and these other people, like, it had been narrowed down again or something.
Yeah,
like,
narrowed
Sony
down
just
to, eight actors, and he wasn't even on the list.
Yeah, he wasn't on it that time. And I was like, oh, well, okay, that's one person
off.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay, he must be off the list, but apparently he's very much on the list? Yeah. I don't know, so... It was either when they – that was when Sony Pictures was reviewing screen tests for all the other actors, which include Jamie Bell, Anton Yelchin, Aaron Johnson, Andrew Garfield, Logan Lerman, Alden Ehrenreich.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so
– I mean, what do you think about it, Dr. Megman? Do you think he'd make a good Spider-Man?
I think he'd be fine. I don't see why he wouldn't. He's the right age for the role that they're looking for. I think he's 17 or 18 years old. Everyone else that they're looking at is in their, you know, mid 20s. So,
yeah, late. I think Andrew Garfield's like 28 years old.
Exactly.
He's supposed to be playing a high school kid.
And they want this character to be set in like the early years in high school. So it's like,
I think that if they're smart, they will cast young and do what they did with the Harry Potter films, which is they got. About what they're gonna get 8 films out of these kids.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if you cast young and a really young Spider-Man, you could just go on for maybe 6 films.
I mean, the kid's a fine actor. It's, you know, it's not like Peter Parker's gonna be a hard role to play for any of these guys. I think any one of them would. You know, would be decent in the role. I'm kind of rooting for Anton Yelchin, to be honest with you.
Just so the Star Trek character could play.
I really like Anton Yelchin. I've liked him since the first time I saw him, which was in Hearts in Atlantis, which was
great movie, amazing.
It was an okay film for me.
Well, I love that movie. But go ahead.
But I just remember watching Charlie Bartlett.
Yeah.
And it was weird because you're like, you're seeing this actor who's probably about to launch off and have some amazing roles. And I've only really seen him in that and like Star Trek. And he hasn't really done much.
Wasn't Terminator Salvation?
Oh, he did Terminator Salvation.
Which was awful.
Which I've removed some of my memory somehow. And he did Alpha Dog.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got...
Hit or miss.
Yeah. I think...
What do you guys think?
I was serious when I said that I really have no desire to see another Spider-Man rehash. Unless they get Donald Glover, which is not going to happen, but...
Unfortunately not. I think that would have been awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, Josh Hutcherson is like, whatever.
People are racist, you know? What can you do?
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because P. Vitter just lent me Spider-Man Blue, which is Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale's collaboration. I think it's from a few years ago, like 2003 or something like that, but it's a kind of comic, whatever, graphic novel collection or whatever you want to call it, but it was actually really good, and I was telling him right after I read it, I was like, you know what, I wouldn't be that angry if Josh Hutcherson got picked to play Spider-Man, because he kind of looks like the character the way Tim Sale drew him in Spider-Man Blue, and I really enjoyed that comic, so I was like, okay, whatever, you know, like, kind of like P. Vader, I don't think any of us have any real attachment to this franchise in the reboot
Spider-Man Blue as the story, which is totally out of left field. I'm just making that up at this point. If they did that as a story, I might be interested, but
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think he's got the look, definitely, so we'll see, you know. And Mark Webb, I think people are just forgetting that Mark Webb is behind all this. So, I don't know. 500 Days of Summer was pretty great, so we'll see what he does with a huge budget thing. But I don't know. I hesitate to write it off completely just because of Mark Webb's involvement. But I'm certainly not, you know, highly anticipating it. But
all right.
Yeah, I think it just comes down till we see that first trailer. I mean, we haven't seen anything. I mean, from Thor just yet. I mean, we've seen shots and things like that. But I'm not fully on board. And
yeah.
it could fall either way.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a fair assessment. Why should we be without seeing anything?
It could be awesome, like, say, like Iron Man, or it could just be decent, like Hulk.
Yeah.
This last Hulk.
Yeah.
Not the
Ang Lee Hulk.
Not the Ang Lee Hulk, yeah.
I'm only going to watch it if they have the kid from 2.5 Men. Like, Peter Parker.
And Charlie Sheen as the Green Goblin. Yeah.
Good.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, this should be... I don't know. I'm mostly excited for it because of Webb's involvement. If Webb wasn't involved, I don't think I'd be as excited about the film. I just think he's going to be able to bring something to it that, so if you've seen 500 Days of Summer, he's just very good at, you know, bringing these characters to life and showing the emotional side of these characters.
And Hall and Oates dance numbers, which I hope the new Spider-Man is stuffed full of.
So, I don't know.
Well, it's been no reaction to that whatsoever. So, alright. I'm discounting your idiotic statement.
I think he's just thinking dancing worked so well in Spider-Man 3.
Yes. Right.
Emo hair.
Yeah.
And one more topic for the evening. Top Gun Part 2. It looks like this actually could happen. Now,
no.
Well, maybe
why
not.
I've been wondering why we haven't had one yet.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't happened.
Well, here's the thing. You don't think it will?
I don't think
it will. Well, if Night and Day continues to suffer at the box office, then yeah, it probably won't.
But we forget he's got the Les Grossman film lined up. And P. Vader was telling me this the other day. He's like, it's all about what are you doing for me right now in Hollywood? What have you done for me lately? And that's definitely true. And with Tom Cruise, you know, kind of tearing it up at the movie awards or whatever, obviously I didn't watch them. And, you know, we talked about them a couple weeks ago, and the Les Grossman movie being made into a full-length thing, you know, spin-off or whatever, I think he's going to gain that, like, we talked about the possibility of that movie actually providing, like, a pretty decent satire on Inside Hollywood or whatever, you know, there's a chance of that movie being good. I don't think it will be good, but, I think a lot of people will see it, and that's all that matters in Hollywood is box office numbers these days, which is unfortunate, but true. And I think before, you know, people will forget about Night and Day as soon as the Les Grossman movie comes out and makes $110 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
You know? So.
But you honestly don't think that if they did Top Gun 2, that wouldn't be a huge hit?
No, I don't think... I don't think they'll make it, first of all, and if they did make it, I don't think people would go to see it. I don't think people care anymore, and I think Bruckheimer, or whoever it was in this quote, said something like, naval aviation has changed so drastically since we made Top Gun in the 80s that, like, they would have to completely rework the story, and Top Gun has almost become the diehard of... spin-off movies, and it's a horrible way of me describing
it, but... you could have Maverick in a room with those controllers flying the drones. Like, he's not really in them.
But
he's just sitting in a room.
2.0? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm talking about with the Die Hard comparison. When Die Hard came out, for years later, there's been movies that are just, you know, Die Hard on a train, Die Hard on a bus, Die Hard blah blah blah. And then Top Gun, the same kind of thing happened with, like, with Stealth and these other fighter pilot movies. There's one called, like, Iron Fighter or something.
Iron Eagle,
yeah.
And,
you know...
1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, so it's just another foundation for... And I think people were sick of it. Like, none of those movies did very well. I'm talking about the follow-up, the kind of spiritual sequels to Top Gun. None of those movies did well. So I don't see any reason why a Top Gun 2 would do well. The only thing that possibly could... discount this thesis is Sylvester Stallone, because
that's
Rambo,
what I'm saying.
And
you
Rocky
look at Rambo and Rocky,
out.
Both of them pretty successful at the box office.
Yeah,
and it relaunched Stallone's career.
To be fair, though,
but
Stallone isn't as crazy as Tom Cruise.
I think it's
okay.
It would be smart because it would have to be a very
character-driven film, and it wouldn't focus on the actual combat, because that wouldn't be the important part, because we've got F-22s that could take out everything in the sky in the 80s, take all at once.
Yeah.
And just how and then we have all these remote drones, who we are would be, quote, against is a completely different...
It and if you do a character-centric piece like that, that's not going to... I don't think that's going to play well with the general public. Like, you know, for a movie that's ostensibly centered around fighter pilots, if you don't actually show legitimate dogfights or whatever, if you do it all drones or whatever they're going to do nowadays, I just don't think it'll have the same appeal to people.
I don't
know. Unless they fight UFOs.
That's possible.
That's probably what they're going to do.
And one more caveat I'll throw on this. If they do make a Top Gun 2, which they won't...
Dude, you're so being negative right now about the Top Gun 2.
Here's it. In 3D.
Oh, of course. It'll be in 3D if it happens.
3D.
If they do make it, if they sign Tom Cruise, if he stars, if he reprises his role, and if Val Kilmer reprises his role, I will see it in theaters.
Well, I can't see Val Kilmer reprising his role in it.
They gotta get Val Kilmer.
I kind of made a joke in the post that I did. It's like, yeah, they could bring Val Kilmer back as like a deadbeat guy that's just, you know, that's just overweight and... Because, I mean, he is.
That's what
he is.
That's
I don't know if
you
saw
McGruber.
What you could
do is you could have it where Iceman turned into this...
like a rogue?
No, he just turned into this fat general, and Maverick is the teacher. And he loves pure flying, and he gets into this battle with Iceman and drones.
But then it turns
into... The human pilot versus the drone.
Yeah, maybe, but then okay, that might maybe work or something, but then you have... If you set up Maverick as a teacher, it's just going to present... You know the studio executives are going to be like, all right, Taylor Lautner and Channing Tatum are being trained by Tom Cruise. And who wants to see that? Come on.
Yeah.
You know that's what they're going to do. Some
well, what if it was like...
Right, you just
what if
killed
it, like,
because now I know Taylor Lautner will be cast in the film if they did it.
Of course he will be. Dr. Rickman, that's not that far of a leap on my
part.
No,
what
it's
if we
not.
Had, like, Jamie
I know,
Bell
but I didn't
and
think
had
of it
some
before.
Other actors like that?
They wouldn't go that route, though. They would go the Taylor Lautner
maybe.
Route.
I don't know. I feel like, they'll capitalize on Mr. Stretch Armstrong himself, and I don't know. This
Taylor
is all...
Lautner, the new
well,
Maverick.
Pilots have a different feel than what you would imagine
Pattinson,
a soldier
the new Iceman.
So, I mean,
oh, man.
That's true.
Awful.
All right. Well, you just killed any
Top
excitement
Gun 2.
I had for Top Gun 2.
They're in space,
thanks
right?
for the podcast.
Top Gun 2, they're in space?
They're in space.
All right, I might see that, actually.
Maverick is manning the mission to Mars. And something happens.
Oh, man. Yeah, sorry for killing that for you, Dr. Bergman.
Yeah, you did it. You did it.
You want to watch it now?
I hope for that.
All right, gang.
Oh, okay, wait, one more thing. This entire news story was based off of, like, a random aside from Jerry Bruckheimer.
It was a what-if.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
just like a kind of a what-if discussion it happened.
Yeah.
So. It's not really happening. We're just...
He was just like, yeah, somebody's gonna come to my office and we're gonna meet about it. And it's like, stuff like that happens every day. Like, all day, every day.
Yeah, I went to his office and I met with him about it.
The truth comes out.
Yep.
When he was talking about people wanting to see Top Gun 2, that was me sending my 100th email to him this week.
Oh, man. He can't ignore you any longer, Dr.
He can't. That's why Top Gun 2 will happen.
In theory.
In my mind.
Awesome.
Okay, so coming out in theaters this week, The Last Airbender and Eclipse. We've kind of touched on The Last Airbender, and I don't think we're going to be recommending it. We've kind of talked about Eclipse a little bit, and I don't think we'll be recommending that one either. So, I don't think we have a recommendation this week.
I'm going to recommend...
Every Man for Themselves!
Wizard of Oz on Blu-ray.
Okay.
They did.
We should do that. Everybody go around the circle and just recommend a random movie
think
people should watch.
Because they did an amazing restoration process on it. I didn't know how crazily they went into it. I don't know if you guys know, but when they shot the old school Technicolor, they basically shoot it with three black and white cameras, and the color is split by a prism.
Really?
And what they did is they took each individual black and white film and restored it. They scanned it at 8K, and they restored it, and then they put it all together, and they remastered they put it all together, and it's to a 4K master. And
so it means it's, like, way brighter?
Just the richer. Detail and the richness of everything. So it's The Wizard of Oz better than it has ever been seen.
That's awesome.
So.
Dr. Brinkman, you want to recommend a random film?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I might take you up on that, because I actually, embarrassingly, have never seen it.
I know. Damn you, sir. Okay.
I've seen all three versions.
Now, Mazur and I actually, we recently went out and bought the Blu-ray version of the movie. There's three versions of it. I've gone through the original theatrical version and the director's cut, and now I'm going to go through, what is it, the ultimate director's cut?
No, there's the the original, there's the special edition, and then there's the director's cut, which actually has less than the special edition. And
well, then this is a special edition that I need to watch. So that's the last one for me. And I definitely recommend you watch it, because that movie is absolutely incredible.
Cool.
And Ben P.
I know.
Man.
I know.
Come on.
It'll happen. Trust me.
Yeah, it will happen.
That and Dark Crystal, I need to catch up on.
I'll lend you my copy of Close Encounters.
All right, awesome.
There we go.
P. Vitter, recommend a random movie.
I don't have a movie. I'm going to go with what we were originally talking about and just watch Avatar, The Last Airbender, on the original animated series, because it's really good. I haven't seen all of it like Bob Neek, but I've seen almost all of it, and it's enjoyable, and you shouldn't compare it probably to the current film that's out.
If you have Netflix, all the episodes are on there.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Yeah, Mazur's, I've seen maybe, I'd say, of the three seasons, I've seen maybe one and a half. Mazur's seen all of them. I know Venkman's seen all of them probably repeatedly. Right, Venkman?
Wait, which one?
The Last Airbender cartoon series. You've probably seen every episode
multiple times. But I enjoy them.
Yeah, it's good. I really liked it. I sat down one time at your place with your kids and watched it. It was just really good. And then I was hooked, and
And then you started watching them at Mazur's place, because
Mazur watched he blasted through all of them on Netflix. And I would definitely...
2 days.
I second that recommendation to watch the animated series. Stay in. Watch the animated series. Don't watch the movie.
And then, get Netflix if you don't have it.
Yeah. Do that. So...
They should sponsor us. They really should.
We push a lot. if I were to recommend anything, I'm actually going to do this. Speaking with Mazur about it, I'm going to watch all the Bourne movies again, the trilogy.
Oh, nice.
Nice. So, good stuff.
Venkman, you're probably going to know the newest status of... Is there a fourth one coming?
They hired someone to write a script. Yeah, so Tony Gilroy, who wrote the first three Bourne films, is coming back to write the fourth. There's no word on if Matt Damon or Paul Greengrass are coming back. Matt Damon says he won't do it if Paul Greengrass isn't involved, and... when Paul Greengrass walked off, so did Matt Damon. So who knows, unless they bring Greengrass in, we're not going to see Damon back in the role.
Yeah, I feel like I don't need to see another Jason Bourne film, but I do want to see a film in that universe. That universe.
Yeah.
Whole Treadstone, whatever.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, there's just so many... There's more guys than just Jason. I mean, he's obviously the best of them.
In the new novels, actually, they're more based on the other side characters. Bourne's only in it like a third of the time.
Yeah, which so is kinda interesting. You could go offshoots with other characters. So,
yeah.
Just have Julia Stiles as the through line.
Yeah.
In the same way, Q was the only through line through all of those original Bond films.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Cool.
If I were to recommend a movie, since apparently there's nothing really worth watching in the theaters this weekend, I would say see the Blu-ray of Master and Commander Far Side of the World.
I recently
saw that, almost, it was probably a few months ago now, but that was the first time I'd seen it. I missed it when it came out in 2003, and I loved it. It was really, really great.
I want to see more of those films.
Yeah.
I would love to see that world revisited.
Definitely.
Disappointing that it just didn't do as well in the box office.
Yeah.
It should have.
Yeah.
I watched that again recently, and I was blown away. Like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean is like the big pirates movie thing, but this movie is like 100 times better than Pirates of the Caribbean was.
It's different, but it's so good. And they built a full-size ship and shot on the ship, you know. Peter Weir, that was just an amazing movie.
Amazing. Agreed. All right, so those are our movie picks of the week. Save your money, rent a video. Or DVD, video, what the hell?
Okay. Netflix.
Netflix.
Yeah!
Netflix should pay us for saying Netflix on our podcast. They don't. Okay. So, well, thank you for joining us today on Geek Tyrant, podcast number 78. We enjoyed having your company. Like always, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans. Then you can follow us on Twitter at Geek Tyrant. And we'll keep you up to date on everything. We'll keep feeding you the news as it breaks. And other than that, peace out, everybody.
Have a good week.
Yeah, have a good week, everybody. Thank you again. We really appreciate you listening to our podcast and reading the website and stuff. So we love you guys. Goodbye.